Hi, everybody. I'm Scott.
Hello, I'm Julie.
And this is A Good Story is Hard to Find podcast,
where two Catholic friends talk about the books and movies they love and the traces of the one reality that lie below the surface.
Oh, indeed. Yeah, this is episode 344, and we're going to talk about Green Book, which won an Oscar, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, yeah.
It did,
it won,
right?
More than one.
Best Picture. Yeah. One of the things that surprised me about this is that the director, previous work were things like Dumb and Dumber. There's Something About Mary. Yeah. And then he polishes his gem of a movie. I thought it was great.
Yeah. I'm glad you liked it. Well, and I was surprised by it because I watched it. The trailers, they didn't look like something I really cared about, you know, and just the type of movie. But I watched it because that's when I was doing movie groups for senior communities. And I thought, I really like this movie. It's such a good road trip, buddy movie. And like you say, it's a real gem. I was so surprised.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now I've watched it about six times.
That's great.
So
that's great. It stars Mahershala Ali and Viggo Mortensen.
Yes.
Who we know podcast from Lord of the Rings. Yeah.
Yes. Friend of the podcast.
Absolutely. Friend of the podcast. Yeah.
Yeah.
Friend of Carl Urban.
Oh.
Probably.
What a combination.
Absolutely.
He's still my heart.
Friend of the pod. Friend of the pod, yeah, Carl Urban.
Friend of the pod. That's
but
it.
Yeah, they were both terrific. And it's really cool to see Viggo Mortensen in a role so different from the one he's most famous for. Mm-hmm. He did a really good job. Played an Italian-American, kind of a mob-type fella, bouncer, not making a lot of money.
Yeah, in the, was it the 60-something? You know, this is set in that time period. I can't remember exactly when, and I'm sure I should know.
Uh-huh.
But yeah,
let me see if I can
everybody's
see.
Smoking cigarettes and wearing
1962,
hats.
1962, okay. Tour of the Deep South.
Okay, that's what I was thinking, something like that. And yeah, he's connected. He's not really necessarily connected to the mob heavily, but I think the implication is when you're working class Italian in New York at that time, you're kind of connected because everybody is.
Mm.
That was the way they played it in this anyway.
Right. And it's based on a true story. So Viggo Mortensen plays Frank Tony Lip Vallelonga. Nice.
Good job.
Yeah. And then Mahershala Ali plays Don Shirley. Both real people. And Don Shirley is a musician. He's a black musician who's mostly classical, kind of a classical jazz fusion type stuff. But it's incredible. The music in this movie is incredible. Oh, I thought it was absolutely great.
Mm-hmm.
And he plays in a trio. Anyway, you can go on, but they take a tour of the Deep South. Yeah.
Yeah, he's a musical prodigy, as it turns out. Hmm. And the story is really told, at least it begins, from Tony Lip's point of view. We see him as a bouncer at the Copa and get a sense of who he is and how he does his job and everything. We see his wife, and she played Lindsay in Freaks and Geeks. I can't remember her actual name, but she was very good. Everybody in this is really good. And one of the things that's funny, this is just a bit of trivia. Most of the people playing Vallelonga family members were Vallelonga family members.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't know that.
And it's, how did the guy who's the son who wrote the movie and had seen the friendship develop between these two people? I can't remember. Was his name Nick?
His name is Nick. Yeah.
Nick Vallelonga.
Yep.
He got that accomplished by basically lying to both the director and Viggo Mortensen, saying, oh, well, you know, the director said it would be okay. And Viggo Mortensen's like, oh, all right. And then he goes, well, Viggo said he wanted these people in there. Oh, all right. And by the time they found out, the movie was half filmed.
So that's too funny.
Yeah, a lot like his dad, I think.
Oh, that's
knows
cool.
how to bullshit people.
That's hilarious.
Yes, but as you say, basically, the COPA's going to have their floors all done, so everybody's out of work for a couple of months. They're casting around for what to do. And Don Shirley's going to go on this musical tour of the Deep South. And since this is in 62, he is not going to be welcomed in a lot of places. So he needs a driver who he also wants to act kind of like as a valet and this and that. And that's agreed. That's not going to happen. And they set out. And what happens is both of them in the experience learn more about themselves and more about each other, which is what a good road trip does, right? Because what are we going to discover on a road trip? Ourselves.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. So, yeah. Yeah. I liked when Don Shirley was interviewing him for the job and how he described what he wanted him to do is much more than drive. But it was basically, I need you to handle these situations, you know, because and Tony Lip, he knew that too. He knew that going down there was not going to be without problems. He says, you're going to the South. It was like him who kind of knew.
Yeah. You know?
It's like, what are we doing?
But he was also, he never talked about it. So this is one of the things about Tony. He's in this way, he's simple. He's a smart man. But he uses the smartness all to advance whatever he's doing. Like, I need $50 for this, so I'm going to enter a hot dog eating contest because I know I can win. He's using his smarts to get by because he's street smart.
Yeah.
But he doesn't spend time talking about what I think and my feelings and whatever. It'll come up in conversation and he'll go, come on, Doc. Because Don Shirley is a musical doctor, his musical doctorate. But he'll go, it's like this. And he's right. It is like this, usually.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean he's smarter than Don Shirley. It's just they're both operating on very different tracks because Don Shirley's very intellectual, very he moves in circles that Tony would never even dream of. So they're both completely different people.
Yeah.
And that, of course, is part of what's interesting about it, because as is true in real life, they became really good friends during this trip.
Yeah. Yeah, I did read a little bit. It said that they maintained contact the rest of their lives. That's really good. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's nice. Yeah, and Don Shirley, he was very prim, very proper, dressed really nice, loved a good suit.
Everybody to enunciate properly. So he's continually going, Tony. And Tony's like, yeah, what? You know, just a lot of things like that.
Yeah. So Tony actually has to struggle with this because at the beginning, we see a scene in his house where two black men come and help fix a sink. And he was uncomfortable enough with that he threw away these glasses that those two drank out of into the garbage, and his wife, of course, fished them out. So, they just showed that a little bit. I mean, this is just the prevailing attitude of the time. He was like, yeah, you know, not really hanging out with these folks. And so when he's offered the job, you know, he actually feels, you can tell, I mean, he's feeling, you know, I'm going to be working for this guy, carrying his luggage and stuff, and I don't want to be seen doing that, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm not carrying your luggage.
Yeah. He does later.
I'll drive you. I'll protect you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because by then they're friends. And everything we've said, if you haven't seen this movie, nothing is giving away anything, because this is a familiar sort of a movie. We all know the beats it's going to hit. These two very different people, they're on this trip. They're going to get to know each other better. And so we know what to expect. It's how does the movie do it? What do we see that's different? And so one of the things, by naming it Green Book, they start off with the focus. You think it's going to be all about the racism, but it really isn't. That's just the thing that you can put your finger on.
Yeah, maybe. That's the world they're in, yeah.
Yeah, and so that's, had you heard of the Green Book before?
I did not, no. Okay. I never. Mm-hmm.
I wound up hearing a Radiolab or something about it a long time ago. And it was, you know, of course, these days we look at this and go, oh my gosh. But, you know, what happened is it was called the Negro Traveler's Green Book. And it was published from 1936 to 1966. And eventually it covered most of North America, Bermuda, and the Caribbean. Because back then, if you were black and traveling around, you couldn't even find some place that would let you go to the bathroom. A lot of people carried portable toilets because they weren't allowed in. You couldn't find lodging, restaurants. There were things called sundown towns that if you were black and you were in town after sundown, you would be lynched. That's just how the law worked down there. And, I heard it on 99%. That's what it was. Mm. So sometimes people would have to drive around all night trying to find somewhere to sleep. And they'd have to pack all their food and everything. So what happened is a guy named Victor Hugo Green, and that's why it's the Green Book, he started the travel guide. And he was a mailman in Hackensack, New Jersey. And he'd heard all these people that he served complaining about their problems traveling. And he'd also heard of this Jewish travel book. And I was like reading this going, oh, right. The poor Jewish people, too. Yeah, they wouldn't be allowed to eat places and all that kind of thing. So they had guides to help them around the Gentiles-only policies that were around. Hmm. And so what would happen is other mailmen from around the country, he would send the word out, and they'd all start going, oh, we know of these places. And that's how it got to be a national guide. Because who knows more than the mailman? He's traveling around the neighborhoods every day, right?
Yeah, right, right.
Because, I mean, think about it. If somebody died while they were on a trip, who was going to take care of the body? Most places wouldn't. Hmm. What if you got sick when you're on a trip? Most doctors wouldn't touch it or touch you.
Right, right.
I mean, it's just, you think of all the problems and how awful it would have been to be treated like that.
Yeah.
And so when we see... not Tony. When we see Don Shirley, at first we're not really made aware of a lot of that because they start off in towns near New York City as they're traveling through the Midwest, and then they're going to go through the Deep South.
Yeah.
And they're in bigger towns, and they're at nice hotels where he could just stay in a room, a regular room there.
That's right. Yeah, one of the first hotels they stayed in, you know, they could both stay in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then a couple hotels down the road, they pull into just a really crap place.
Yeah.
And Mortensen's looking at the Green Book. He says, is this really, you know? And, you know, he felt bad about it himself. And Don Shirley just says, yep, this is the place. So,
Because what Viggo Mortensen starts to see is just as a human being. He's never been exposed to people being treated in that way with such a close view.
Yeah.
So he's, and at one point Don Shirley says, oh, really? You think if I was in your neighborhood back home, this conversation would have gone any differently? And it's when he'd been in a bar, and clearly we're into spoilers. So go watch the movie if you haven't. But, sorry.
Yeah.
But he's been in this. He's gone down the street to a bar to get a drink. And he's being attacked by all the white patrons in the bar.
Yeah.
And
So Viggo luckily is a bouncer.
Yeah.
But one of the trio. So the other two parts of the trio are white guys, and they actually drive in a separate car. yeah. I don't know why. I'm assuming for comfort. I don't know that they would have had a problem being in the same car.
But I think he would have.
Yeah.
I think.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
Wanted his space. Yeah. The Don Shirley. Yeah.
Right. So, anyway, one of them runs and grabs Mortensen in his hotel room, and then they rush down, and he gets him out of that situation. He had the right guy at that point.
Well, and it's one of those things where, I like the way they kind of show us who Tony is in this movie. And this is kind of a tribute to the subtlety with which it's shown, even though it's a big topic a lot of the time, and how well the actors portray who they are. Because a lot of the enjoyability of this movie comes from the great performances from Viggo Mortensen and Mahershala Ali. I mean, they are nuanced in these. We know the type and we know the beats, but they're showing us something different all the time. And they've got a great chemistry together as friends once they get to that point. But just even in dealing with each other, they know who their characters are, and they're just, they convey it so well. But so one of the things we're shown as the movie goes on is why Tony Lip is Tony Lip. And at one point he is explaining to Don Shirley, it's not Tony the Lip, it's Tony Lip, because I'm so good at spinning bullshit. And he goes, oh, are you proud of that? You're praised for lying. And he says, no, I'm not lying. I'm always telling the truth, but it's the way I tell it. That's what gets the job done. And so at the very beginning, what you see is a special patron coming into the copa. He hands his hat to the hat check girl and says, don't let anyone touch his hat. It's my special hat. And the minute that happened, he goes away. Tony Lip comes up and gives her some money and says, give me the hat. So I'm not supposed to, just give it to me. So he takes it and he hides it. And at the end of that evening, there is a huge scene being raised. And the owner of the copa is there trying to calm this guy down because his hat's not there. And they kind of are getting over it. And playing a hard game. They're gambling. And Tony comes up with the hat and he goes, I found the hat for you. He goes, oh, never call me Mr. So-and-so again. Call me Carmine or whatever his name is. It's like, you did it. And he goes, take this. He goes, oh, no, I didn't do that for money. He goes, take it. You're my friend now. And he goes, oh, well, okay, if you insist. So that's him spinning it for his own, that's his, what he does to manipulate situations for his own advantage. And then as it goes on, you see him in the bar and also doing things like getting the right piano. Yeah. When the place doesn't want to set up a nice piano like is required in the contract.
Right, had to be a Steinway. Yep.
And the piano they had, it was full of trash. So I've never seen such a thing. There were old cups thrown in the top of the piano.
It was like it was outside or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so he manages these situations, and he's always polite and nice at the beginning, but a lot of times he has to do force. But in this bar, he comes in, and as you say, we see he knows exactly how it works. And that's the moment when we're watching him again. Oh, really? And he sticks his hand back under his jacket, like into the top of his pants. He's like, do you want me to pull this gun out, basically? You don't have a gun. Don't I?
Yeah.
And so he's bluffing the whole time. And Don Shirley says, did you have a gun? He goes, oh, no, of course not. And of course, at the end of the movie, yes, he had the gun the whole time.
Yeah, he did have it. Yeah.
But he didn't want to escalate things.
Right.
He knew what to do to get everybody to kind of back down. And then the bar owner, of course, pulls out a shotgun and goes, this isn't happening. You take your guy and go. You guys settle down.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, but I love that.
Yeah, but we see him using those talents to better or worse affect the whole time.
Yeah.
And that is a lot of what he kind of has to overcome, because he's used to having to manipulate things just to get his own way and kind of support his family and take care of everything. And that's the world that expects that of him, too.
Right. Yeah.
All the people he knows are like that, too.
Absolutely. And, you know, Tony was an outsider on this trip, too. I really enjoyed the scene where at their first stop where he's going to do a concert, they're in the lobby walking toward the car, and Don Shirley is explaining to him, you know, who he's about to meet and who comes to these events. And you might want to change your name, you know, so that they can say it easy, because you're coming in and they're going to introduce you. And then he says, you know, I'd rather stay outside than change my name. And he said, well, that's a good compromise. So he makes him stay outside. Or he chooses to stay outside. And that was really something, too, when at the end of that event. So during that event, from outside is the first time he sees him play. Tony sees
right.
the trio play, and it's stunning. I mean, is really good. Really, really good. And then after that little exchange that they had where Don Shirley said, "You chose to stay out here. That's the difference. You know, you didn't have to be here. You know, I have to be places else. You'd get to choose not to be here, you know, if you don't want to be."
Yeah, he's like, all these people were outside, but all those other people were black drivers and things.
Yeah. Yep.
He says, you chose.
They did not have the choice, and you did. That's the difference, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah, very interesting. But Tony, you know, he was an outsider. He was more at home outside playing dice than he was in the crowd of people that show up to these events.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like to watch this kind of music. So
yeah, because in his world, because you make a great point, in his world, the very important people are just different, more powerful versions of who he is.
Yeah, right.
And we see that when he's in a bar, I guess, just having a drink, and some people from the back room want to see him. And they're talking about somebody he beat up as a bouncer earlier that night, but he's like, "Oh, you need a job? You come work for me. I'll take care of you. You'll make good money." And he's like, "Oh, no, I'm okay. It's fine." Because he doesn't want to get in with that level of mobster, basically.
Right, yeah.
But they're the same as him.
Yeah.
He's just a better, more honest, nicer version of that.
Hmm.
You know?
Family man.
He's a good man.
Doesn't want to mess that stuff up. Yeah.
Right. He's a good man. He understands how it works.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Don Shirley, we see as he and Tony interact. And it starts off, and again, with all this, it starts off with small examples that grow into bigger things that are brought back to make the points again. So like with the fried chicken, because poor Don Shirley, he's been raised in such an artificial world and traveled in it all the time that he's never had fried chicken.
Yeah.
It seems unsanitary, unhygienic, eating it with your hands. And whereas Tony's super excited, "What? We're in Kentucky and there's a Kentucky Fried Chicken. What are the odds? Oh my gosh, we have to have some." And so he gets a bucket of chicken because he's eating all the time. After a while, you're just like, "I can't take watching you eat anymore."
Yep.
He's eating all the time. So anyway, but he gets Don Shirley to try this piece of chicken and he does really enjoy it. And, you know, they're throwing the bones out the window and everything. And but the fried chicken thing keeps coming back.
Yeah.
So, because Don Shirley also, he's like, you're black and you've never had fried chicken? It's like, look, I don't have to eat fried chicken because I'm black. He goes, no, but it's delicious, you know.
Yeah.
But then later it becomes a symbol of something else, which is when he's in a wealthy home. And they're like, "Well, we asked the kitchen staff what Mr. Shirley would really enjoy to eat. And so they fixed it up special for him. And it's huge platters of fried chicken." I'm like, you could hardly be more insulting. But, you know, but he knew how to eat it. He looks at Tony and they both kind of smile and like, okay. And then at the very end, he's eating fried chicken at a place called the Orange Bird.
Hmm.
And that's where he really demonstrates that he's synthesized all that Tony has taught him in terms of allowing yourself to feel more free, you know, because he was doing things because people expected it of him, and not always, but I mean, he was talking about playing the classical music and all this kind of thing. And he goes, "But they want me to play popular music." And Tony's like, "But what you do is you. It's so good. You should be happy to do that for people."
Yeah.
You know? And he does when he's there.
Yeah, and it was an interesting thing, you know, listening to music while they were driving and how separated Don Shirley was from that. And that was an interesting little thing.
Yeah, I've heard of Chubby Checkers or whatever.
Right.
He's quite good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, so that was pretty cool. But yeah, so Don Shirley, you know, was like, you know, there was a point at which he was wondering where he fit at all, you know.
Yeah.
I'm not black enough, you know, or I'm not white enough. I can't remember the line, but he was talking about, I don't fit in any of these groups whatsoever. Yeah.
Yeah, because Tony, with all his preconceptions, is always applying those to how Don doesn't fit into them.
Hmm.
And he's saying, I'm more black than you are. I mean, he's just infuriating Don Shirley at that point. And he's like, what do you mean? He goes, I eat fried chicken. I know all your music, you know, your people's music and everything. And he goes, I'm more black than you are. Uh-huh. And that's when he's like, stop the car. Just stop it right now. I'm walking. And that's when he says, well, I'm not white enough to fit in anywhere, and I'm not black enough to fit anywhere, so where do I fit?
Mm.
And it's the real expression of his loneliness.
Yeah.
His isolation from everyone.
Yeah, and even the fact that he was playing in the trio, he felt was not the best use of his talent.
Mm-hmm.
And he felt sort of compelled to do that because that's what people would see.
And the record companies wanted it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And he goes, anybody can play Chopin or whatever, says Tony. And he goes, not the way I play it. I was like, that's I loved that. That was great. I love that
too. Yeah. And poking around just a little bit on Don Shirley, I did get on YouTube Music, I did get one of his albums, which is called Orpheus. The one about the orphans.
sitting around the bonfire. You mean the demons sitting around the fires of hell?
Yeah.
Whatever.
So good. But yeah, but he was, in fact, Quincy Jones, may God rest his soul, passed away very recently.
Yeah.
Very recently. I think it was last week. But I found
did
a quote.
Did he produce him?
No, I'm not sure if he did, but he did say that Don Shirley was... He was one of the best, and you know, he said, you know, he was as good, and he named a couple of people that he was as good as, and you know, they were top notch pianists. You know, he was just saying this guy belongs in the same pantheon as the greats. One of the interesting things I found out about Don Shirley as well is that he studied at the Catholic University of America in Washington D.C.
Really?
Yeah. He was known as Dr. Shirley for 2 honorary doctorates.
Okay.
And, he said he studied with Conrad Bernier and Thaddeus Jones at Catholic University of America in Washington, D.C., where he received his bachelor's degree in music in 1953.
Okay.
Yeah, very cool.
Good.
So, let's see, he was born in 1927 in Florida, to Jamaican immigrants, and his mom was a teacher and his dad was an Episcopal priest.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Very interesting.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Well, and it's interesting that he, the real person, and also in this movie, chose to fight racism not by marching or the other ways that were going on, protesting. But what he did is want to provide an example of his equality or even superiority in the world of all the people better than black people.
Mm.
And I liked it because it also was showing a good example for black people who were around him that they could aspire to more. And somebody could achieve it. And so we see that in several ways. Some of them are like when servants are around or like, you know, that club at the end where they're like, oh, well, no, you can't eat in the restaurant. All the servers are paying attention to it. And they're all black men, you know, in waiters' outfits. And then we really see it when the car breaks down, the radiator is too hot, and they're having to put some water in the radiator. And he gets out of the car, and he's wearing his suit and maybe a cravat. I mean, very fancy. And they're next to a field where field hands are working.
Hmm.
And they all gradually stop what they're doing and just stare at him. And I can't even imagine. He must have looked like a mirage, because here's a white guy driving the car and fixing it. And this unbelievable, elegant black man standing there smoking a cigarette while waiting for it.
Yeah.
And he must have just been astounding.
Yeah.
To them.
Boggled the mind. Yeah.
Right. And then what you see in the bar, like I was saying before, it's kind of a synthesis of he can be himself in all the kinds of music. But also what that does is he starts off playing that incredible piece of classical music And that's something that, let's see here. It is Frédéric Chopin's Étude 25, number 11, Winter Wind. It's considered one of the most difficult pieces to play, earning the A9, which is the highest rating on Henley's levels of difficulty scale.
Wow.
So he's whipping that out in this bar where everybody's just stopping and awestruck and then all clapping like crazy. And then he goes off and he's doing his own kind of jazz.
Yeah. That was really cool. Also,
Yeah,
right after that pivotal moment where, you know, he's putting up with all this unbelievable stuff. I mean, it's stuff that we've seen in other movies, so we know the world.
Mm-hmm.
We dislike the world, of course, but
where he
plays a set and it's just amazing, and then he's like, I need to use the restroom. And then there's so, you know, they say, well, you can't use this one.
It's not inside.
Just unbelievable.
Oh, yeah, this ramshackle outhouse out there by the trees.
Right. So we go through just incident and incident of these little just horrible things. And then we finally get to this spot where he's going to play in this restaurant. And he's not even allowed to eat there. And then he puts his foot down and, you know, I'm not going to play here unless you let me eat. And that's how he ended up in that bar in the first place, right? Once they left there, because he finally, you know, decided, I'm not going to do this again. I'm not going to do
it.
So off he goes to the bar where, again, he eats a little fried chicken and has some beer and plays the piano. This not a Steinway, and goes for it,
an upright. Yeah.
It's just an upright, and he sits down and plays and is obviously, you know, incredible, and then starts to play jazz. Yeah, it's really good.
Well, and he's probably never been in a place like that in his life.
Yeah, right.
So. Yeah. Not only are they seeing something they haven't seen, but when he said, how do I fit in?
Mm.
Where am I? I'm not too white enough. I'm not black enough. Well, now he can fit in.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then at the very end, right. When he shows up for Christmas, thank goodness, at the Vella Longa's house.
Yeah.
He fits in again.
He does. Yeah.
He can, because he's still on his own terms, but his world has been broadened in a different way.
Yeah.
And he that was really knows something a little too. Bit.
That was really, really was nice. Yeah, it was really nice. Yeah. Because the whole drive back, you know, and they get him back in time for Christmas Eve.
Yeah.
Tony invites him in, but he says no, and he goes back to his home where the servant is there. I mean, the guy that works for him is there. He's an Indian, I think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, they get him all set, and he says, no, you go home to your family. And then he's sitting there by himself, and then he gets back in the car in the storm and drives back to this guy's house and shows up, and it was cool. And I loved how his wife said, thanks for the letters. Because she knew.
Oh, my gosh.
She knew that guy was not writing those letters.
I'm fine, how are you? Yeah. You can't go from I'm fine, how are you, to, you know, I'm reminded of your beauty when I look at the plains of this great country. He was like, we wasn't on no planes.
So, that's so good.
Plains, the big fields that you liked. Oh,
and I really, you know, I like that there's a scene where they're both in a room together, both these guys, and Tony's writing a letter. I mean, this is pretty late in the movie, and Don Shirley is just, you know, what are you doing, man? Do you need my help? And he says, no, I got it, you know, and he reads, he takes it and reads it, Don Shirley does, and it's really not good. But he gives it back to him, and he says, you know what? You got it.
I thought it was good.
It was better than it was when he started.
Well, that's it. But what it was is it's what he'd learned.
Yes, yeah.
He didn't have
the artistry that
Don Shirley had, but he'd gone from, I'm fine. How are you? I'm eating spaghetti right now while I write to you. You know, like something a second grader would write.
Yeah, right.
To something where he says, you remind me of a house.
Yeah,
right. It's got all the windows lit and it looks warm and, you know, all the thin, it's inviting and all this stuff. And that's when he goes, yes, this is, he's expressing himself in more than just, I love you.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're so, right. That's exactly right.
Yeah. And so that, and that's the thing about the movie. This is just, you know, I have to say, to me, this is kind of old fashioned filmmaking, like big studios don't do anymore.
Mm.
You know, you watch the old movies and it's this classic story and it's set in the 60s, but it's just, it's this friendship, but they keep coming back to these little things. And it doesn't have to be pointed out to us. Oh, here's how it was. Here's how the letters are going now. Oh, look, he got to this point. He doesn't have to be any better than that.
Yeah.
That's good for him.
Mm.
You know, and so one of the things it's showing us, of course, is that this trip in general shows Tony how to think. It teaches him how to think.
Mm.
So the way he learns to express himself in writing, the way he even says, I didn't know this country was so beautiful.
Mm.
He's stopping and really taking it in and thinking about it. And then really he learns how to, the example of how he's learned how to think and then act on it is twice it gets mentioned. Oleg, one of the trio, says, you know, Don didn't have to come down here. He could have stayed up north and made three times every night what he's making down here. And the first time he's like, why would he do that? No one answers him. And the second time he says, you know, he's like, this is why he's doing it.
Hmm.
This is how he fights, basically.
Yeah.
And then is when he's denied dinner in the restaurant at the very place that's a special Christmas Eve event or Christmas event. And he finally says to, when he's saying, I won't do it, I won't, if I can't eat here, I'm not going to play here. And he finally looks at Tony and says, if you want me to, I will.
Mm.
He's going to accept Tony's judgment on this.
Yeah.
And Tony's like,
yeah, and it's no because way. Partly because he's Tony's going to lose money.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
He knows exactly. That yeah, I don't want to hurt you by my decision. Right. Yeah.
And Tony says, forget it.
Right.
He can't stand to see him treated like this. He protests the terrible room where he has to change clothes. He protests that why can't he eat like we do? The guy tries to bribe him. He says, why don't you just get your boy to do this as he's pulling out the money? He's like, you're telling me. Oh, and actually, that's kind of why I think that's, now that I'm thinking back over the scene, he gets furious. He goes, you're bribing me to do this. And he grabs the guy and slams him against the wall because one of his big faults is his fast temper and his violence.
Mm.
And that's when Don Shirley comes up and says, Tony, no, this isn't the way. And he goes, but I'll do it if you want me to.
Mm.
Because he's shown how much he cares for him by being so angry over it and fighting for him. Yeah, I mean, Tony has.
Right.
And then he says, I'll do it if you want me to. And he's like, no, we're not doing it.
We're not doing that. Yep.
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah.
Yep. Really then, terrific.
Yeah. Because then also what we're seeing is, so, and so Don's also kind of trying to improve Tony on the way, just because he doesn't like the way he's acting. Not personally. He's just like, I can't believe you're doing this. Don't throw the paper cup out the window. don't steal the souvenir. Even though it was on the ground, but you know better. Don't, you know, just react off the top of your head when you're upset.
Yeah.
Because he's judged just as much in the South, almost, as Don Shirley is, because he's Italian.
Mm.
So though you're half nigger. I was like, what? Excuse me? You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, but what, of course, Don Shirley learns, his horizons are broadened, and we've already talked about the fried chicken and playing jazz and everything. But he's learned that he's not going to always be judged for who he is, because during that incident when he's caught in the gay moment by the cops, and then later he tries to apologize. He's really sorry about that, you know. And Tony Lip's like, hey, I've worked at nightclubs for most of my life. I know life is complicated.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's not going to judge him for it.
Yeah.
And I don't think he's ever received that acceptance from anyone.
Right. Yep. I don't think so either.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a nice moment.
And it's nice because, you know, the beautiful thing about Tony is he would just say stuff in a really simple way.
Mm.
So when Don's told him about his brother, who he doesn't talk to anymore, he says, you know, because they're talking about now Tony's writing the letters and Tony's good at it. And He says, well, you ought to write your brother a letter. He goes, he knows where I am. And Tony says, the world's full of lonely people afraid to make the first move.
Mm.
And where that comes back, and we see it, is when he shows up for Christmas Eve dinner.
Yeah. That's great. I love that. Yeah, I didn't make that connection, but you're right. He made the first move. Yeah.
Well, you know, I've watched it 6 times.
I love it. You're so right.
But that's the beauty of this movie is it seems like it is a simple movie. It is fun to watch. They're making some big points, and sometimes they make them in big style, like when they get arrested in that sundown town. But a lot of the times, it's the little things that are the little threads through it that they bring back using some of those items, you know?
Yeah.
It helps us get it. And if you watch it more than once, then you know the story, so you can kind of relax and look at some of the other things that the actors are doing.
Mm.
You know, it's really well made. I can't believe this director made this movie, considering the other stuff he made.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Which, to be fair, it could be genius. I've never watched them. Not my kind of movie.
I have to admit that I have. And
okay, how were they? Were they good at their style?
They're funny. You know,
but I think there's something about Mary. Yeah. I heard it was really good. I just, you know.
Yeah.
Broad comedy's not my thing. I'm more of a Don Shirley in that area.
That's funny. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Too good. Oh, I love it. Yeah.
Now, this movie did have, I'll just mention this, a certain amount of controversy.
Hmm.
Because in the times that we live in, let's see, would this come out in
2018.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So you've got everybody with very thin skin about stuff. And when it came out, it was criticized by the Shirley family, who said, oh no, Nick Vallelonga was just a servant. They were never best friends. And the son, Nick Vallelonga, said, well, you know, I don't want to hurt the Shirley family in any way, but they were together on that trip for like a year and a half or something. I mean, they got home for Christmas, but then they hit the road again, I guess.
Uh-huh.
And so, or they changed it for the movie just because, you know, we didn't have a year and a half. But he says there's a lot of stuff they don't have. And it says, to be quite honest with you, Don Shirley himself told me not to speak to anyone. And he only wanted certain parts of it in his life. He only allowed me to tell what happened on the trip. Since the family weren't on the trip, and this is right out of his mouth, he said, no one else was there but your father and I. We've told you. He says, and he approved what I put in and didn't put in. So there was that criticism from the family, and the bigger criticism was that this was a white savior story.
Oh, yeah.
So this is the idea that a black person can't save themselves. They have to have a white person to help them.
Yeah.
And if you think about like Uncle Tom's Cabin, sometimes you don't have the power.
Right. It's like Don Shirley was in control of the whole thing. I mean, he's the one who decided where he wanted to go. He knew what the dangers were and he hired this guy, you know? So,
he was the boss and Nick changed. I mean, not Nick, I'm sorry. Tony changes too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is why it's a buddy movie. It's not about one person making the other person better.
Absolutely.
As a project.
He was, and you know, just that little scene. So again, at Christmas Eve, and Don Shirley decides not to go upstairs and leaves. And then Tony goes back upstairs. He's with his family, and somebody makes some little racial joke or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, don't call him that, you know. Don't do it.
Yeah. And this is the guy who threw the glasses away when the plumbers.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. He says, don't do that. Yeah.
Yeah. The guy just looks at him for a minute and he goes, okay.
Yeah. And, I mean, it's just a shame that it was received that way because, I mean, this is how people change. You meet people, you, learn about them that way, you know. I think people fear what they don't know, and this is how people know. You know what I mean? And I'm not saying just the movie, but I'm saying the situation that this real situation that happened created change, right?
Right. You spend time with each other. You get to know who each other are. And suddenly they're not, as people like to call them these days, the other.
Right, right.
They're your friend. Or they're at least somebody you know. Even if you don't like them, you have a reason for not liking them. Because I don't like the way way this guy slams people into the wall when he, you know, is upset.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Right, right.
And in their case, they had a good enough friendship by the time all that stuff was happening, like in the sundown town. He goes, no, we're in here because you lost your temper and hit that cop.
Yeah.
He goes, I didn't like how he's treating you. He goes, no, you didn't like how he's treating you.
Yeah.
Don't. And he called him on it, and he was right.
And that's kind of funny. You know, you make me think of something, because it really pushes against people saying that all of this group is like this. And so Don Shirley is very much not like other black people of the time. Mm-hmm. And like you said earlier, Tony Lip is not like the mob Italian Americans of the time that he was working for, right? Because he chose a little bit differently.
Yeah.
You know, he says, I don't want to get into that. I want to stay clean and, you know, because I'm a family man or whatever. But he was like not quite the stereotype.
Yeah.
Right. So they were both stepped away from.
Exactly.
The yeah.
And you see a little bit more of that quality, too, when they're in, I can't remember, some town on the way. And it was after the gay incident and everything. And there's two guys coming out of the hotel who recognize him from New York. And they're talking in Italian about, what are you working for the eggplant for? And I was like, oh my God. I've never heard that. I don't want to hear it again. But anyway, and so I'll give you a better job.
Yeah.
Come and talk to me. And he's like, oh, all right. Because he's got to talk to them.
Yeah, right.
But when Don Shirley's like, please, you've been so good, don't leave me. And he's like, oh, I'm not going to go work for them.
Yeah.
You know, and he's like, I'll pay you more. Mm-hmm. You've been so good at this. And he's trying all the ways he can think of to keep him. He goes, no, we agreed on this amount. That's fine.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I don't want anything more. It's fine. Mm-hmm. So the controversy over the white savior idea was, you know, somebody had said it really well this way. One of the most depressing hallmarks of our time is a tendency to read the worst motives into any public statements, including films on thorny subjects like race and gender. We seem increasingly unwilling to give each other the benefit of any doubt. And so all these people were going, oh, this is a white savior thing, all that kind of thing. But people like Harry Belafonte said, I'm writing this letter to thank the filmmakers because I knew Don Shirley. And I had an office across the street from his at Carnegie Hall. And I experienced what he experienced at the time. And it goes, it's accurate. It's true. It's a wonderful movie everyone should see.
Cool.
And he says, there are a lot of perspectives to tell a story from. Mm. And every one of them can be true.
Yeah.
And he says, and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the NBA.
Yeah.
He published a piece in the Hollywood Reporter defending Green Book, despite its alleged historical inaccuracies. And he argued that the discrepancies of some of the depicted events may irk family members, but they don't really matter because the plot details are about getting to a greater truth than whatever the mundane facts are.
Hmm. Yeah.
And in that sense, I really loved that that defense of it, because that's what story does. You take something and you say, we're going to tell the story like this because look at what it's showing us.
Right.
And that's what this movie does. You know, they didn't take a year and a half in the movie. They took till Christmas or whatever.
Yeah.
That's what needed to happen to tell the story in this medium. But it was, you know, it was really good.
Yeah, the story makes you feel it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. It engages everything. So, yeah. I love that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well done, Kareem. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was very pleased.
Yes. That's
and
great.
Plus, it was hugely popular. I mean, you know, every time I say only depressing movies or artsy movies get given Oscars, of course, this movie won an Oscar.
Yeah.
And it made so much money.
Oh, very good.
Yeah.
While you're looking that up, I looked up the other movies from that.
What were they?
Yeah, so we have Green Book 1 and then Black Panther. Black KK Klansman,
Oh, that was Spike Jones.
Yeah.
No, not Spike.
Spike Lee.
Jones. Spike Lee. Thank you.
Bohemian Rhapsody.
Oh, yeah.
The Favorite.
I don't know that one.
Roma.
Don't know that
and
one.
And Roma is Alfonso Cuarón on Netflix. I haven't seen it. And okay. Then A Star is Born with Bradley Cooper.
Oh, yeah.
And, man. Yeah, and Vice. I think Vice had to do with Chaney, didn't it? Wasn't that a Dick Cheney movie?
I don't know.
I think it was. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, it's an American biographical political satire, black comedy film.
Okay.
Christian Bale right. as Dick Cheney.
Now there's a stretch. I mean, I'm sure they did great, and he looked just like him. And yeah. But.
So Viggo was up for Best Actor, and Rami Malek won for Bohemian Rhapsody. And then Mahershala Ali won Best Supporting Actor.
Yeah. And Green Book won Best Picture. And Best Original Screenplay.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, because when I was looking up stuff like this to talk about tonight, I was like, I'd completely forgotten that it won. I was like, that makes me so happy. It's just a normal kind of a movie. And so it cost $23 million.
Hmm.
And it made $145 million.
Wow.
So people liked it.
Good. That's great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it holds up, as I've said, to rewatching.
Yeah.
Because for one thing, you know, you pull this movie out and you just go, oh, just a good movie. I love these two guys so much. And just everything about it is, you know, just wonderful.
Hmm. Yeah. Yep. I agree. Very good movie. Very good. I enjoyed it quite a bit.
I know at the end where they're just hugging each other and smiling, it just makes me so happy.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, all I was going to say is the more I watch it, the less the racism is standing out as being about racism. Hmm. It's about the two guys and their friendship.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and all the other stuff is there.
A buddy movie, yeah. Like you said.
Yeah, yeah.
Very good, very good.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks again for bringing me this one.
Oh, I'm glad you liked it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course I did. I thought it was good. Yeah, of course.
Of course you did. You got good taste. Of course
I did. Yeah.
You bet. Okay, Tony. I guess I'll call you Scotty. Okay, Scotty.
I love it. Right. Heck yeah. All right. So what's up next for us is a Life of Christ. To Know Christ Jesus by F.J. Sheed. Yeah, I saw so one time, I can't remember where I came across it, but somebody said, I read A Life of Christ every Advent. And I thought that was a very cool practice. And even though we'll be doing that right before Advent, because I don't think we'll be in Advent quite yet. That's a practice I want to keep.
Oh, I was wondering why you chose them for, I mean, it's perfect.
Mm.
But yeah, and I read it, I can't remember why I picked it up. I mean, I had it because we were going to talk about it, but I think several months ago I picked it up and said, well, I'll just read a little here and there.
Yeah.
No, I just read through the whole thing. It was so good. So I just had it sitting there all marked up. Yeah.
Perfect.
Ready to go.
Perfect. That's great. But yeah, I'd like to keep so that good. Practice, but we'll talk about that next time.
We will.
We shall. All right. Yeah. Well, thanks for listening, everyone.
Yes, thanks for sticking in there with us through the whole trip through the South and all.
You bet. Oh, I love it. All right. Yeah. Catch you in a couple weeks, everybody.
Yeah, we'll talk to you again soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.